everyone, and welcome to today's episode of Apartment Investing for Early Retirement. Today's guest is Darren Light, a mechanical engineer by trade, real estate investor by choice. He is currently a general partner in 204 units and continues to flip 4 to 6 houses per year. He has been having great success in real estate, is a great guy, and I'm glad to have him on the show. Darren, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Derek. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. I know a lot of us are cooped up at home right now, so appreciate you taking the time to come on and add some value to our listeners. Before we really get going, why don't you just kind of give a little brief story for how you got to where you're at today, you know, maybe where you started in real estate, just a brief summary.
Sure. I started in real estate, it'll actually be 4 years ago this coming August, 2016. I started educating myself. I went to a guru seminar in Knoxville, Tennessee, where I currently live. Paid way too much money after I went to 2 or 3 meetings and learned how to buy single family houses and do flips. So I actually started that. I bought my first 2 flip houses in February of 2017. Did a little bit of the rehab work on one myself and then just started to accumulate single family rentals from that point moving forward and doing flips. Fall of 2017, I got a free ticket to Jake and Gino's very first live event in Knoxville. They're headquartered there, which some people do know, some people don't. So I'm fortunate that that was the case as well. An hour into that meeting, I realized that the way I was trying to create a new life for myself was not the right way. And an hour into that, I totally changed my mindset and went into multifamily, started selling off my single family assets. 2 years ago, I was actually laid off from my W-2 job as a mechanical engineer. I'm a mechanical engineer by trade. Had been laid off before, maybe 15 years previous. And when that first happens to you, you kind of fret, don't know what you're going to do because you're doing what everyone else has taught you to do through your parents, college, it's the 401k way, the whole traditional way of making a living, working 40 years and maybe having something when you're done at retirement, right? And 6 months probably before that layoff occurred, I found myself, I was already into real estate, but hadn't really found multifamily at that point. And I would literally walk around the office where I worked and notice people just staring at their monitors, myself included. And I thought to myself, man, we are slaves at what we're doing. And we're basically making one person rich. When it all boils down to it, we're making one person rich. It's a private company held there locally. And so when that occurred to me, being laid off, I was like, man, all right. I cashed in my 401. I cashed in my stock options. I threw it all into real estate. Was still in the single family phase at that point, but knew exactly what I wanted to do and how I was going to get there. And then obviously that strategy changed once I got introduced to multifamily. And by that occurring to me, it forced me to make decisions that I would have delayed making had I just still been trying to figure out, okay, is it the right time to quit my job yet? Is it the right time to quit? And at some point, you just got to do it. You know, I'm more of the ready fire approach instead of ready aim fire. And I've learned that you can never be prepared for everything that could happen to you, whether it's in business or life in general. And so I'm glad it happened the way it did. I joined Jake and Gino community right after I was at that live event. You know, at that point, you're still on calls with Jake and Gino. I think we started a mastermind shortly after that with 10 or so students that had been around for a while. And so didn't have a lot of the accountability coaching, but nonetheless, still great education. But I'm going to tell you the mistake I made was I thought just by joining the community, I was ready to go do stuff, but without educating myself. And so so what happened was I joined the community and 4 months later, I had a 70 unit property under contract in Johnson City, Tennessee, 2 hours from Knoxville, and was out of due diligence and did not have a partner. It was a $1.5 million deal. Didn't have money raised. Went to a property management company to say, hey, I'd like for you to run this property, you know, and I've never met this company or the lady before. And she said, I know I just met you, but I'm not going to let you buy this property. And I said, what? You just met me. Why would you tell me that? Basically, what I didn't understand is that although you have an MSA for a city or an area, you've got to narrow down to your neighborhood where you want to buy, of what those metrics and parameters show you about jobs and population growth and the demographics and all that. So where I was buying within a half mile radius was all low income housing of various forms, single family rentals, some subsidized housing. And this complex itself, they managed one right up the hill, the company did. And she said, you know, you can go pull up police records, things go on there every night. And I couldn't see this when I was there, but I didn't know because I didn't educate myself. So I tell this story, and I told it in public in January at a Jake and Gino boot camp, which was awesome, first time. I lost $56,000 on that deal with no property in my hand. So I lost my due diligence money, and the broker threatened to sue me. So I tell people that story now for two reasons. If you're going to invest in your education, do it. Educate yourself. Whether you're getting into a family like Jake and Gino or some other people are out there doing the same thing, or you're paying a mentor, go do what people have already done. There's no reason to reinvent the wheel and add value to them, and then know your market, know your due diligence. So that's the reason why I tell those two stories. And then from there, within the Jake and Gino community, I started partnering with other people. I have a main partner now through that community, and we started acquiring assets, and through whether we were finding the deal or they were finding the deal, and now we're general partners in 204 doors. We're continuing to look for other opportunities in our market, and we as partners, we still do flips, 4 or 6 homes a year. So that's sort of a quick catch up on some lessons and how I got to where I am currently.
When it comes to the education aspect, Bill Hamm says it best, you're going to pay tuition one way or another. You can pay it up front, exactly. Get educated, or you can pay it when a deal goes south. You know,
exactly.
So it's just sometimes, it can be tough where, okay, a cost to get into a group, but really if you really go for it and you get in, you get around other people, it's not a cost, it's an investment, because you're going to get that money back regardless of what it is. If you really put in the work, you take it seriously, and you get out of your comfort zone, you're going to make that money back and then right. Some, it's definitely something is to make sure you're educated and you have people to bounce things off, have that community. That's that's something that I lacked where I was, so I got into the group and just the people that you're able to meet that have already done it. That's what you need to be around.
Totally agree.
So yeah, certainly recommend getting around a group, however you do it. So you had mentioned you were at that event and that kind of changed your mindset to multifamily. Like, okay, this is what I have to go to. What were a few reasons why? Like maybe you had the mindset of, starting smaller, gradually building up. Were there a few moments at that conference that really stuck, that changed it as to why multifamily?
Yeah, I think a couple of the big things really was just from an hour into it, my mind was made up. 1 hour. I remember looking at my watch, like saying to myself, I've only been here an hour, man, and I'm ready to do this. One was the scalability of multifamily to create generational wealth quickly. And number two was the reduced cost of running an asset like that, as opposed to if I go out here and buy a 20 unit complex versus 20 single families, man, my insurance and maintenance alone and taxes on those single families will be so much higher than the 20 unit complex. Just stuff, common sense stuff that I didn't know. And so those are two of the big things. And then when I was there, just the genuineness and the family aspect that I could sense from Jake and Gino, and just their raw realness about them that I sensed. I think I'm a decent judge of character. Sometimes you make some mistakes, but man, that was another huge factor for me. And I'm like, I would love to learn from these guys and know that it would be valuable in my journey.
Yeah. You're learning from someone, they can guide you through. So when you were going through, okay, now I'm going to look into multifamily, this is the path for me. How did you kind of determine what market you were going to look into, and what were you looking for market criteria? And also to double on that, what were you not looking for that you should have been? I know you kind of touched on the story of that first property, but were there any other items?
Yeah, that's a good question. I started looking in Knoxville because I knew that's where Jake and Gino had invested. And I knew that, job growth and population growth had been great there and was continuing to be great there. I knew that all these new companies were moving headquarters to there or factories to there. I knew the quality of life was there, was great there. I know that Tennessee has no state income tax. I've pretty much been in Tennessee almost my entire life with the exception of a few years. And it just, you know, quality of life, going back to that part, you've got the Four Seasons in all of East Tennessee. And then I was, it was Christmas time, and I was with my family in Kingsport, Tennessee, the northeastern part of the state. And that's called the Tri-Cities area. It includes Bristol, Kingsport, and Johnson City. And to be honest, I just, one day I was looking online at Christmas break. I was already in full-time real estate. I'm like, let's see what's going on up here. I looked up some data for that area and learned quickly that Johnson City was the up-and-coming city of the three due to the same reasons, population growth, job growth, revitalization of downtown and things like that. Things were happening. MedTech Center, four-year university, just similar to Knoxville, but on a much smaller scale. So I decided, let's look up here. What the heck, right? And just started reaching out to, even at that time, I was still reaching out to residential realtors, not necessarily commercial brokers, because I didn't know. But that's how I sort of started getting connected with some people. And then from that point on, the whole scenario, what I just described about, you know, going through the first property, if you will, where I lost money, but then learning how to talk to some other brokers and meeting some other people. And then some other people from the Jake and Gino community actually found this one, but in Johnson City. And so then Gino put us together. I guess things that I was wanting to make, I did know that, hey, I can't go a B or C class asset in a D class neighborhood. And I knew that there's some neighborhoods in Knoxville. They're everywhere. They're in every city. So that's one of the things that I did not want was, and I'd even looked at some property in Knoxville at the time and linked up with some brokers who were sending me maybe 10, 12, 15, 20 unit deals. They're just in a bad part of town. Yeah, the Prosper Door was great, but there's some things you can't change. You don't be the first one on the block out there struggling. You know, depends on where gentrification is occurring or not. So, yeah. And then the same partnership that we did this deal in Johnson City with, probably 3 months later, we ended up buying one in Chattanooga. So this one partner found both of these deals. And both of them, if I'm not mistaken, if I recall correctly, were under contract when they were found and fell out of contract. And what I quickly learned was that all of Eastern Tennessee is a great market. Continues to be a great market. What happens in those areas, Knoxville is more of a secondary market, Chattanooga, secondary, tertiary, Johnson City, more tertiary as well. So these areas sort of become insulated when we go through an economic crisis like we're going through now and back in 07, 08. Yes, companies closed down, people lost jobs, but not to the extent of what occurred throughout other parts of the country. Housing took a hit, but not like what it did in some other areas. So just through more digging and thinking, okay, I don't want to go out of state if I don't have to. Let's just see what else this entire area has to offer. And that's just kind of how it happened.
Again, to touch on that first deal that you had, you know, didn't have anyone to partner with, didn't have any money raised, any of that. You know, so kind of change your mindset. And again, you mentioned you were connected up. How did you kind of go about, you know, getting that team assembled both for partners and then also what do you kind of go through when you vet for, say, a third party management company?
So the connection was made for the first deal that we did get through the Jake and Gino community. Gino himself made the connection. Email. That's another little tip that I'll give to everyone is when you make a connection with people, email is the best way because it's a warm connection as opposed to me giving you someone's phone number and you calling them, because most people, if they don't recognize the phone number on their phone, they're not going to answer the phone. But by email, everyone checks their email every day, several times a day. I learned that from Gino. So this is how this happened. Through Gino, the guy had the deal, I think already in contract. He was the first person, I was the first person they put me in contact with. And then I had accelerated my education at that point, you know, through the academy. I'm like, man, I've got to get my act together and know what I'm truly doing. I can't go through this again, you know. And because I'd done that, I immediately reached out to a person that I had met at the very first live Jake and Gino event and contacting him, sent him the numbers. He was like, yeah, man, I like this. And then we just started contacting other people we had already met from within the community. They were all community members. Assembling the team, let's go back to assembling the team. We contacted a local bank who we had heard good things about. There's a branch in Knoxville where Jake and Gino had done a lot of their community financing when they first got started, had a great relationship with them. So we reached out to their branch here in Johnson City and felt really good. They felt good about the numbers, about the deal. We also used legal counsel through Jake and Gino. Pretty much everyone that we had, that they have used in the past, we also utilized. To your point, twice so far, don't reinvent the wheel. These guys have been doing it. They've got great relationships with them. Let's do a little name dropping. Hey, TIS Insurance, Kelly Carter, this is Darren Light. Jake and Gino gave me your name and number. Oh, yeah, okay. Instantly, you have credibility. That's another tip for the listeners. So we utilize them. We try to utilize the bank. So the bank's a different story. We thought we were all good with the bank. Probably 2 weeks before closing, they decided not to do our loan due to our lack of experience. So we had a backup plan with a bridge lender. We ended up getting a bridge loan. It ended up working out anyway, even though we're paying a higher interest rate. But there was a huge rehab to take place. We don't really – that's what they say the reason was they didn't approve us was the community bank. But anyway, we utilized people that Jake and Gino had already been using. We didn't really necessarily go out and find our own. Oh, we also used their legal counsel. I mentioned that before. Property management. So property management, I ended up going back to the same property management company because just sat in that woman's office for an hour and just kind of hit it off as far as just getting along, had a great feeling about them as a company. Went back to them and said, hey, you remember me? And they now manage 103 of our units, two different complexes here in Johnson City. But the way I vetted them and or moving forward with anybody, let's say I have to have someone where they don't manage and you're interviewing a new one. A lot of the questions I ask center around this is going to be sound simple, but how do they treat their community members? And we call them community members. We try not to call them tenants. And this is sort of along the Jake and Gino model as well, but we've learned the importance of it. They live in homes. They don't live in units. They don't live in apartments. They don't live in condos. You know, they live in homes. So, and how do they refer to their tenants that way? How do they treat me? Do they treat me as just another number? Do they treat me like family? They've become family. What kind of reporting systems, CRM, do they use? Are they up to date on technology? Are they still taking checks? Are they trying to make people pay online? Do they have experience with RUBS? If they don't, are they open to it? So those are some of the questions that I would be asking. If they're still doing everything by handwritten applications and people walking in with checks, can it work? Yes, but it's not efficient and it's not where things need to be for just running your business the way it needs to be ran.
And it'll be interesting too to see how, you know, with what we're dealing with right now, when we're recording this, we're in the midst of the COVID-19 shutdown, essentially, is right. When you build those relationships with the residents, usually you get a better understanding of just what's going on. You're able to help them if, you know, they got furloughed right now, to point them to the resources, to really work with them to get through this. You know, it's a challenging time for everyone. You know, there's uncertainty moving forward. But if you have a better relationship from the start, you know, it's not putting in a position to get walked over, but you can tell you want to work with, when you have good people that are living there, you want to work with them, you know?
Right. So. And if you have an owner that's difficult to get along with, if the property management, the last deal we bought that we closed in mid-March, I guess, the previous owner that we bought it from was very hard to get along with, wouldn't supply CapEx money to the property manager, and then bitch and complain and moan why they don't have units ready or whatever, and pick apart financials and just hard to get along with. So when you have the top owner like that, you're not going to have the relationship with tenants, community members that you need to take care of them, you know, and this is changing daily. We still don't know what's going to become of May. I think that's going to be the sign of where we're headed. Hopefully it'll be downhill and be almost done. But to your point, yeah, it's changing daily. It's brand new territory for everyone. You got to be able to shift and adapt. You got to be able to adapt to sudden change. Posted a video about that today with Inky Johnson. Getting off track. Sorry.
Oh, no, that we're fine. That kind of leads me into another question I have for you is, with everything going on, what are your next steps? You know, how are you preparing to prepare to get through, and then how to thrive afterwards?
So a couple things we're doing from a current property standpoint is we weren't necessarily proactive in telling the tenants, hey, if you lose your job or if you have an issue, we were worried that they might open a can of worms and them maybe not being honest about, hey, yeah, I've lost my job. But it's kind of happened simultaneously that we sort of done that through our property manager and given them options. So we have done several things. We're saying if we have a community member that was scheduled to move out, we've gone to them and said, has your situation changed where possibly you've lost your job and you would like to stay now? And if that's the case, we're trying to get them to stay without bumping their rent. And if there's anything that we can do for them, that maybe there's something inside their home that's not been repaired that they just haven't shared with us or something. Some community members do that. They won't tell you if something's wrong. Hopefully with us taking over now, that won't be an issue. But if we can spend $300 to $500 and make them happy and keep them as a community member and then continue to pay, we're doing that. We're not bumping any rents on renewals. We've waived all late fees, which I think has actually been mandated. We waived all evictions, which I think has also been mandated. We are actually waiting. We just had communication today with our investors and partners on, hey, we've got these two units down at this deal we just closed, but we want to see how May goes before we actually dump about $17,000 into them to get them up and going. We had a couple plumbing issues in them. And so we're sort of all agreeing on that standpoint. And we've held back more reserves for this last property that we closed. Instead of just going and doing all the CapEx stuff, we're only doing the projects that Fannie is requiring us to do and doing it within a certain amount of time. But the rest of it, we're holding back just to see what may happen so that we can be sure we cover our debt service. Moving forward with, we are continuing to look for lead flow. We're continuing to get lead flow. Yes, we are getting some of those broker calls that we've had contact with for months or a year, year and a half or whatnot. They're reaching back out and saying, hey, remember this such and such deal? And I think we're just now seeing the cusp of that. I think as we roll into May, June, July, August, probably for the next 6 months, we'll see brokers continue to pick up the phone and reach out. But we're trying to be proactive and reaching out to the ones that we already know and saying, hey, just checking in, seeing what's going on. And that will, you want to be in the forefront of their mind so that when they've got another deal where here's what we believe is happening. You've got two sets of owners. You've got one that's been holding out for 6 months to a year for top dollar, but their property's not worth the top dollar they want. They're going to see writing on the wall. And as each day goes by, they're hopefully going to come down in price and finally maybe be willing to accept an offer that's what their property's worth and have the broker pick up and call you. Then you're going to have the people that we think might be inexperienced. They're in over their head to begin with whenever they bought their property 6 months to a year ago. They're over leveraged financially and hadn't really thought about selling. And now they're going to start thinking about it because they can see the writing on the wall of what might be happening. So we're trying to stay in the forefront of brokers' minds, even sellers. If we have direct contact with some sellers and some wholesale people that we feel good about bringing us opportunities. We just want to be one of the first ones on the list that they think of and reach out to.
You know, for people who would maybe be getting started into multifamily, or, you know, whether they're new, they want to be, regardless of whether they want to be passive or active in it, you know, they maybe saw what happened with the stock market, the roller coaster that's been going on, or the people that have a portfolio of smaller properties and are looking to move up. What would you recommend that they should be doing right now so they can capitalize, you know, once we go back to whatever the new normal is, but the repercussions of that from the hit we're taking right now, how they capitalize on the opportunities that lie ahead?
think with the way things are currently, where a lot of us are working from home, have more time, it seems, they should be doing two things. Regardless of how this keeps going, the first thing is find a mentor. Find a local mentor. It doesn't have to be someone that lives in another state or is one of these guru types. Find someone. Man, there's so much free information out there because of the internet now. And you can it's at your fingertips. Find a mentor and start listening to podcasts and or watching YouTube videos that a multifamily successful investor is doing it and doing it the right way. And I'm not necessarily saying you have to go invest in an education platform. If you want to try to speed up your learning curve, by all means. Now, while I love the Jake and Gino education platform and think it is invaluable, I also am a firm believer that, and maybe this is just from my personal standpoint, but I share this with almost everyone I meet now, especially new students. The best way to learn, in my opinion, is you get in front of that mentor face-to-face and just pick their brain apart, hear them tell you stories about this deal, that deal, how they do this, how they do that. And if you can add some value to them, whether it's learning underwriting and helping them underwrite deals, whether it's finding deals, whether it's doing their bookkeeping, whether it's helping them with their processes, doesn't matter. If you're willing to do whatever to add value to them, they'll invest in you in turn. If they don't want it, if you find a mentor and you know they're just wanting money or they're just not open to what your goals are, just go find another one. There's a million mentors out there that are great people that just want to give back. So yeah, I'd say education through podcast, LinkedIn, YouTube, Bigger Pockets. A lot of people start in Bigger Pockets, man, and then they find the multifamily way and or a person that's already doing it. It's been done for 100 to 200 years here in the U.S., real estate. So you don't have to reinvent it.
Then with the changes that lie ahead, I guess it's a lot of unforeseen right now, but kind of what are some thoughts that are going through your head for how this changes, how, you know, multifamily real estate, how that'll go about, you know, maybe a change in, what residents are looking for in a unit, the way that you utilize common spaces. Do you think that there's going to be a little pullback where people are more timid? And would any of those reflect what you look for in the future for properties?
You bring up a great point that I have not thought of at all. I've wondered about that. You see some people write and blog about some of the stuff that we're going through now is how will this possibly change how we congregate anywhere in public moving forward? And had not thought about multifamily space, but I can see where it could and might. I just think we don't know yet where it might go. So yeah, a gym or a clubhouse or a grilling space or even a dog park at some of these, hopefully they'll still be a need and a want and a desire, you know, and hopefully we won't always be meeting like this by Zoom calls, because that could change society drastically. But I don't know. I think like everyone else, like most people, it's all speculation at this point. I think now I do know we're already seeing it. It's going to be a great time to invest in from between now and the end of the year. Things are going to happen. But along those lines, I think it's just a wait and see. It could drastically change. You're right. And if there's a drastic change like that, I think you wouldn't see it for, you know, a year or more down the road where some people that get spooked easily or whatever. People have their own concerns. You have to respect that. But maybe I would not want to be in an A-class asset now because they all have those top spaces. And, you know, generally those spaces are the highest rent. And those get affected more easily as opposed to the lower Bs and high Cs, what we invest in. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on maybe that congregating space, if you will?
Yeah, I just wonder, you know, again, those pool spaces, I feel if it's more outdoor, it'll right. still be okay. But I just feel like this is going to get some paranoia going moving forward, you know, not necessarily to the level that we're at right now, where you cannot go to these events. You can't be around people, you know,
yep.
in Wisconsin, yep. it's, you know, no gatherings of more than, I mean, frankly, more than your family. They don't want right. you to be anywhere apart from whoever is in your immediate household. Okay. Right. Obviously, once we get past this, that'll change. But I think that's still going to be in people's minds where, yeah, maybe the grilling area, the dog park, people still, you know, they love their pets. So, you know, that'll be fine because it's more of an open area. But I just wonder, yeah, what the gyms turn into, because everyone's touching everything. Again, yeah. you would think that the people are going to be disinfecting, you know, they'll wipe stuff down. But I really feel that maybe those units, that second bedroom mm-hmm. is smaller. It's not really a full bedroom. You can't get a queen bed and your furniture in there. Where right. once that starts getting advertised as a home office,
yeah,
you know, man, I don't think there's going to be that point. Much of it.
That's a great point. Or a gym. You have your own gym in your apartment. I hadn't thought about that. Wow.
Yeah, I just see a trend. I mean, again, I don't know. This is just speculation, but that yes. trend of more work from home or partial work from home, you know, I feel that's going to change that office setting where some people are able to, you know, kind of graduate into just working from home 2 days a week or whatever. Wow. You know, you kind of get a little bit of a breakdown. So there's not as many people at the office at one time, or I don't yeah. know. I mean, I just feel wow. that the home office is going to be a feature that people are going to be looking for.
I do believe that corporate companies will realize that they can function with more people working from home than maybe what did before, or more days per week at home, whatever it is. And they're going to realize, oh, we don't have to have this 5,000 square foot office space and pay all this overhead. That's what I think is going to happen, is a lot of these office buildings are going to end up empty. And some of these smaller ones are going to your point. And yeah, you're onto something. I think that's a wait and see. It could totally change. You know, you should write an article about that. Post that.
Might have to.
There you go. I have not. No one said that to me. I think that's golden.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look back at, you know, 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010. There's a lot of money was made in those years. You know, because of mm-hmm. buying then, getting now. To where it's at, but there were a lot of companies that were started then. They were able to see
correct.
The trends of where consumer demands were going. You know, Uber started, Airbnb, you know, just getting stuff like that, where there's a lot of opportunity right now. Is it scary, kind of the place that we're at? Because it's so much uncertainty. We're creatures of habit. We don't want this new, we've been so thrown for a loop where, how is it when we go back to it? Okay, if you have this home office and that's big demand, how do you kind of get that space in, you know, where it's not necessarily your three bedroom units are now your two bedroom plus an office? You know, you advertise as that. Is that going to pull more people? Right. But if they're working at home and they're not able to be at the office socializing, I guess, does that have an effect on the common space? You know, it's just, how is this going to roll out remains to be seen, but
You could even take the home office concept a step further and have the furniture already set up in the unit when the community member rents it. Just another, however you want to market your stuff, you know, it's a possibility. Interesting that during this whole epidemic that we're in, just this morning before we got on our call here, had to meet someone. We're having our dumpsters moved from one spot of our property to another one at our 62 unit. And the guy jumped out of the truck. He's older than me. Immediately, he puts out a fist bump, basically to say, I'm not shaking your hand. So I've gotten caught off guard a little bit when I meet someone new that they've done that. And it's just part of, and to your point, I think it might be that way for certain people for the rest of time. You know, you just don't ever, I'm a affectionate dude, shaking hands with guys and hugging everybody, and just so that's not first time you meet someone, but you know, so that's an adjustment for me personally. But I don't know. It's interesting to speculate and see, but I never thought about what you brought up. I think that's a great point, something to think about.
Yeah, it's like a 9/11 event that changed
exactly
everything about how we travel. That changed a lot, you know. Yeah. So, and this is the same type of it's just such a shock. It's such a, I don't know what's happening. Things are going to change. We don't know what it is, but being able to adapt to that and kind of see the front end of it right. can put you up for a position of great success with it.
So. Agree totally. Agree 100%.
So yeah, a lot of great stuff. We'll just have a few questions here, quick questions before we wrap up. So what does the word retirement mean to you?
Retirement to me means doing what I want with who I want, when I want, where I want. That's it in a nutshell. Now, but that does not mean that I would no longer run a business. So I don't, I'm sort of with the Geno philosophy. I see myself when I'm totally financially free and know what that is on paper to allow me to do that. I just want to travel the country and help people do the same thing I'm doing. I want to be that mentor. You know, I'm fortunate to be coaching with Jake and Geno now as an accountability coach, but I want to be helping younger people that are either deciding on, should I go spend $100,000 on a college education that may or may not benefit me in the future, especially with the way this world's changing now, or should I go do something else? I want to be that person that says, hey, have you thought about this? Let me show you how to do it. Oh, well, is that going to cost me anything? Nope. It costs you doing what I ask you to do and watching you become successful. But, you know, I want to do that at the beach. I want to do that in the mountains. I want to do that wherever. And, yeah, that's it.
It's a level of freedom, and it takes finances to get there, but correct. It's not a goal of a number. It's the goal of it's lifestyle.
Exactly. It's not a number.
Awesome. So you kind of touched on the event, live event that really got you to change and go into multifamily, but was there a book, you know, kind of related to it or habits, you know, kind of mindset? Is there a book that really got you changed and, you know, focused and in on real estate, or should say multifamily real estate, that really sticks out to you?
There was not a specific book related to real estate or multifamily real estate. And I'll tell you two, but I'll tell you this. After I had already been laid off from my job, I read, and I already referenced it before, previously, I read The Go-Giver by Bob Berg and realized, always knew that I had this gift to give back to others, believed in the golden rule. It's also scripture, so I believe in it even more for that reason. You know, treat your neighbors as you want to be treated. Yeah. So, but that book took giving back to an entirely different level for me. And so that book, and then there's a person that I follow on social media and in real life named Inky Johnson, who motivates me each time I read a quote from him, watch a video. He has a book too. He's a former Tennessee football player who had dreams of going to the NFL, was paralyzed in a freak play his senior year, and God totally changed the trajectory of his life. But he will tell you that it was meant to happen because of the amount of people that he's been able to touch. So because of that. And so I'm always following him, keeping up with him and that book. And I try to, I'm reading more than I have ever in my life. So right now I'm reading Compound Effect. And occasionally I'll still read some, you know, enjoyable stuff, like personal stuff, like C.S. Lewis and some other people like that. But I don't read a ton of books. I'm a very slow reader, just throwing that out there, admittedly, that I have to read something generally once or twice to comprehend it. So, but I know it's developing my mind. It takes a lot to get me down mentally. So I'm always generally high. And so that's why I don't really need a book per se to motivate me or change my mindset, because my mindset's already where it needs to be. I have bad days, don't get me wrong, and love being around people and thrive being around people, but there's days when that just, you run out of energy and you have to have a day to yourself and you just kind of regroup. So I'm getting off topic of books, but I work out every day, take a rest day here and there, but I work out regularly. That is motivation for me, you know, to keep my body in shape and keep my mind well in that regard too, because that's when you think, you know. So I hope that answers kind of where what you're looking for there.
Yeah. Yeah, the goal is just to get people pointed towards something new that might be able to help them out. So great stuff there. And I know I gotta read The Go-Giver as well. We were talking about it before we got on the call here. So moving on. How do you like to give back? I know you're a coach, you know, so you're helping people out that way. You like to connect people up, but you know, is there something that you really are passionate about to give back, not necessarily in the realm of real estate or business, but just in general, in any regard?
I give to my church. That's something I've done my entire life. We just did a little fundraiser for our, we host a meetup. We started a meetup last March. We didn't even touch on that, but we meet every other week, and we meet at a local restaurant here in Johnson City called Sabores. And the owner laid off all their employees as soon as all the stuff hit, just so they could draw unemployment. And we raised some money. So people from the meetup, some people from within the Jake and Gino community, I did a little Facebook fundraiser. So that's just something specific, not something you do every day, but we're giving the money to the owner and letting her basically use it how she sees fit, and maybe to the employees or whatever the combination is that she needs. So, cause they've been totally supportive of us. They don't charge us for the space, and we always buy food and drink from them. They're phenomenal. And, so that's just something locally that's happened recently, but on a regular basis, you know, there's not really anything I do financially, but just giving back as a coach and being able to connect people, I think that's invaluable. And just getting on calls with students that are not even maybe my student, that either Marco's reached out to, or they've reached out to me. I've had that happen recently. I was on a call with a coach last night. We were just kind of swapping ideas and just kind of feeding off one another and helping each other. So, I don't know a stranger. That's what people say about me. You know, and it may not be monetary, but it's whatever it is, word, you know, encouraging word, phone call, text, whatever. I guess maybe that's one of my gifts. I think it is, and connecting. And a lot of those connections, you never know if they're going to pay off down the road. You may never hear. And you may get one of those emails that goes, thank you so much for connecting me with so-and-so. And you're just like, yeah, that's why you do it.
Yeah, awesome. I know I can attest to, you don't know a stranger. So first time I met you down in Knoxville, came up, and it was as if we had known each other for years. You know, just
I remember that, man, in the hotel lobby.
Yep. So yeah, that was great. But lastly, how can listeners find out more about you or reach out to you at all?
Well, they can contact me through my Facebook page, personal page. I also have a Crawford Investments LLC page. And then my main partner, Greg Scully, and his wife, Kim, we have a realwealth.solutions website. So we're partnered now on everything that we do. So you can go to realwealth.solutions website to learn more about us individually and what we do and what we're doing moving forward. You can also, you know, send me a text or call me on my cell phone. I'll just go ahead and give you the number. It's 865-310-6362. And then my personal email is my first initial last name, dlight6362@gmail.com. Contact me or through LinkedIn. I've been trying to utilize LinkedIn a lot more. It's got a lot of power as far as just business and professionalism. So that's another way as well.
You're very, very generous with your time and your knowledge. So I've certainly appreciated that. And I know dumped a lot of great stuff on our listeners today. So really appreciate you taking the time. I know we ran a little bit longer than scheduled, but once you get going on some good stuff, it's hard to stop. So really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, Derek. I appreciate you having me on, man.
Yep, absolutely. Take care.
All right. See you soon.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning into this week's episode of Apartment Investing for Early Retirement. Please be sure to rate and review wherever you listen to podcasts, and check us out on Facebook and Instagram. The links will be in the show notes. And if you enjoy the show, please be sure to share it out on social media so that we can reach more and more people to help educate them about the opportunity that multifamily investing provides to help reach their version of retirement sooner than later. Take care, everyone.